Okay, I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order and let the record reflect that the time is currently 1:33 p.m. on Monday, March 23rd, 2026. And present today, we have Representative Co-Chair Shragi, Co-Chair Josephson, Representative Galvin, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. I'm sure we'll have some more folks streaming in here. Just a reminder, folks can mute their cell phones. And we have one item on the agenda today. We've also got with us Representative Moore. And that one item is House Bill 133. It is payments of contracts by Representative Hemshute. This is our first hearing on the bill, and so we'll get the introduction. We'll take invited testimony, and I think I heard there are three people. And then after that, we will set the bill aside. And so again, this is the first hearing, and I'd like to invite up, we also have with us Representative Tomaszewski, as well as Representative Bynum. And so with that, Representative Hemshute, as well as your trusty staffer, Ms. Ella Lubin, if you could please come to the table and put yourselves on the record and give us a overview of the bill. Thanks for being here. We also have with us Representative Hannon also.
Thank you, Chair Foster, through the chair to the committee. Thank you for hearing House Bill 133 today. I'm really excited about this piece of legislation. In short, the problem that we're solving for is too often contractors and grant recipients doing business with the state of Alaska experience a delay in payments. What that means is the state of Alaska depends on contractors, nonprofits, municipalities, and tribal organizations to deliver essential services. And there is no standard for them to be paid on time. In contrast, if you're a private contractor completing public works projects, there is a standard. We'll just call it a 30-day standard. And what this bill seeks to do is to expand that standard to also cover tribes, municipalities. I say tribes, I mean Alaska Native organizations, municipalities, and nonprofits, so that they have the same right to prompt payment. I'm sure you're all aware, payment delays can range from several weeks. I'm sure you've heard of these, from several weeks to, in some extreme cases, over a year. That threatens the long-term stability and viability of service providers. And these issues can affect everything from payroll to infrastructure projects that they might be working on, insurance renewals, and continuity of social programs. Vulnerable populations who depend on consistent support are particularly impacted by these delays. And organizations, in my opinion, should be able to count on the state of Alaska to be a good business partner. So I guess I'll just speak briefly to the impacts that I mentioned a little bit already. Service disruptions, if an organization has to pause operations, that can result in a disruption of services to the Alaskans served by an organization. Sometimes nonprofits or tribal organizations or municipalities will have to dip into savings. A municipality likely has savings. A nonprofit is less likely to have a deep well to draw from. And the financial strain, there's 165 municipalities in Alaska, and being able to fund payroll and infrastructure projects is essential. So the higher costs that can result, I heard of one nonprofit that needed to fly an individual on their staff from one place to another. They were waiting for that state payment to come in. It came in too late, and they ended up having to buy a last-minute ticket. So it can increase costs in ways you would never imagine. And then the lack of parity, it just to me feels like we need to offer protections for those folks doing a lot of the good work on behalf of the state of Alaska so that they have standing if they are paid late. House Bill 133 will establish prompt payment requirements for nonprofits, municipalities, and tribal organizations, as well as all private contractors by enforcing interest penalties on late payments. This legislation ensures state and federal pass-through funds are distributed efficiently and equitably. And it's basically modeled on the existing statute that we already have for private contractors completing public works. I think HB 133 is an example of good governance, and it holds the state of Alaska to the same standard consistent with anyone else that we are partners in business with. So that's House Bill 133.
Great. Thank you very much. I'd like to jump right into invited testimony. And we've got three folks online, and then we'll circle back and open it up for questions. So with that, first up, we have Ms. Lori Wolf, CEO and President of the Foraker Group. And for folks online, if you could maybe just, if you're on a speakerphone, maybe sometimes we have better luck with not being on the speakerphone and maybe getting closer to the mic if possible. So anyway, if Ms. Wolf, if you could put yourself on the record.
Good afternoon, members of the House Finance Committee, Chair Representative Foster and Co-Chair Representative Josephson and Shragi. My name is Lori Wolf, President and CEO of the 4-Acre Group. Let me just do a sound check there for a moment.
You sound great. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you for inviting me to testify in support of House Bill 133, which establishes prompt payment parity for Alaska nonprofits, municipalities, and tribal organizations in grants, contracts, and reimbursements from the state of Alaska. Thank you to Representative Hemshute for introducing House Bill 133 and its several co-sponsors for crafting one of the most important recent pieces of state legislation in support of the work being done by Alaska's nonprofits. Think about this data. 3, 6, 9 months, and more than a year. Those are the delays we're talking about. And $25,000 to over $1 million. That's how much money we're talking about in delayed payments. From seniors to infants to transportation to arts to everything in between, the state relies on nonprofits, tribes, and municipalities to deliver services as its partner through grants, contracts, and reimbursements. Yet this partnership, when it comes to money, is broken. Imagine being an executive director of a nonprofit required to report on all the money you never received and having to justify to the state about those expenditures so that you can be in line for the next payment while you're still waiting for the first one. Now imagine you had to find the money to do all of that because the money you were supposed to get never came. This should sound odd and unbelievable, and yet this is the consistent reality for too many nonprofits. I would go as far as to say that this should feel unconscionable, and yet it is business as usual for the state of Alaska. Some of our executives don't even know the reality. That reality could look different because it has been this way for so long. Let's be clear. This is money that has already been approved by the legislature. One would simply assume that if the money is budgeted, allocated, and approved, then spending should occur. That seems efficient, and that seems like good government. In fact, prompt payment is exactly the rule that the state must follow with private businesses as directed by state law. Specifically, under the current law, AS 36.90.200, if you are a private business or contractor working on a public project like an airport, road, or other infrastructure projects, the expectation is that you will be paid on time. If you are not paid on time, the state faces penalties and interest, and the company can even stop working until payment is received. While stopping work is not an option for us, we want prompt payment for our partner from our partner to deliver services Alaskans depend on every day. To also be clear, the impacts are not just missing payments. It is a laundry list of issues that ripple out from delays, like cash flow issues, operational delays, increased administrative burden, uncertainty in financial planning challenges, negative impact on staff and services, a strain on relationships, and the impact on program continuity. And these impacts should feel like enough to change the way the state operates, but the reality is it doesn't just hurt nonprofits and those we serve and the people we employ. It hurts our economy in every community across Alaska. While we have never been able to get each department to share their complete list of overdue payments, we know from our own research and the testimony offered in hearings on this bill that it occurs in almost every department, and it has been happening for years. Because of this, we've tried for more than 6 years to solve this problem before asking for a legislative fix. During these efforts, we have often been met with resistance or misdirection. One former commissioner told us nonprofits should just take out a line of credit to manage delayed payments from the state, as if it were the nonprofit's job to subsidize the state's inability to pay on time. Lines of credit take collateral that many nonprofits will never have. It is not the job of nonprofits to subsidize the state of Alaska, and that is exactly what many of them do every day. We subsidize the state. What other choice do we have? With House Bill 133, we're asking the state to be efficient, and in return, we promise to offer services that are predictable, stable, and available to Alaskans. A recent shift in this bill is of note, and that is the additional language of the possible use of rural healthcare transformation project dollars. The brief intent language in the current version of House Bill 133 is an acknowledgement of the potential role of these dollars in making progress on prompt payment parity. While it's true we cannot dictate how the federal CMS will respond to possible investments in state technology, I hope the state will choose to spend some of those funds as technology updates to meet all prompt payment deadlines once this bill becomes law. I strongly urge you to pass this bill and move it to the floor so that every lawmaker will see that it is simply common sense to pass House Bill 133 so that we can assure that an effective and efficient government is a ready and respectful partner to nonprofits, municipalities, and tribal organizations who are on the ground delivering services to Alaskans. This is an opportunity to do something good and right that benefits all Alaskans and the health and well-being of our economy. I thank you for your time, and I will stay on for questions.
Great. Thank you very much, Ms. Wolf. Do want to note that since pretty much the start, we've also had with us Representative Jimmy, Representative Stapp, and Representative Allard. And do we have any questions for Ms. Wolf? I don't see any questions.
Oh,
sure. Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Ms. Wolf. I appreciate you being here. And I wondered, I know you have direct contact with so many nonprofits and tribal organizations and are familiar with this problem for years and years. And so I wondered if you could share with us, if you know, how often is it that the state is a pass-through and waiting on federal funds that are delayed?
Ms. Wolf?
Through the chair, thank you for that question. Of course, you know that the state relies heavily on the federal government. We've heard as much as 37% of the state government funding comes from the federal government, and much of that is passed through to nonprofits and municipalities and tribal organizations to do the work that the government has to do. In terms of total numbers, I don't have a total number for you at this time, but I'm happy to research that number as best as we can. We don't have an accurate account because it would require each department to report to us what that looks like, and we have never been able to get one answer because every department uses a different system.
Thank you. And through the chair, I don't need an answer from you. I think it's possible that the bill addresses this, and I just want to make sure I understand where the real problem lies and if the bill addresses it, which I believe it does, and we can get to later.
Okay. Representative Himshute.
Thank you, through the chair. I want to tackle that question right away. On page 2 of the bill, starting at line 30, and it continues on to page 3, it does say if the agency uses federal funds to pay the grant or reimbursement agreement, the agency shall pay for satisfactory performance within 30 calendar days after the agency receives a payment request that complies with the grant or reimbursement agreement, or within 30 calendar days after the agency receives the federal funds, whichever is later. So those delays are accounted for in the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Through the chair, then I want to make sure I'm interpreting what you've just read in the bill, which means that there is a safety valve, if you will, for the state. They're not going to be incurring these fees if they are waiting for federal funds to come in. It's whichever is later. So I really do appreciate that, but I also appreciate that if we are a pass-through, 30 days is very reasonable. So I thank you for that.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Hannon and then Jimmy.
Thank you, Chair Foster, Co-Chair Foster. And I'm not sure if this question is best asked to the 4-Acre Group or to the sponsor, but in our letters of support package, there is a letter from the city of Tuxuk Bay, and it's the only one that's from a municipal government, and I'm just interested in the example. So as opposed to what we think of as typical nonprofits, here's a local government that isn't getting their community assistance that is put in the budget by us. It's in there as a statutory thing, and I am curious as to whether Tuxuk Bay's experience is normal, that even though there's been a legislative authorization, it's a formulaic distribution based on some population figures, do most of our local governments see a substantial delay from the state in transferring that money that in many of our small local governments is probably a huge piece of their local budget? And I don't know if in organizing for this bill, how much how many local governments have communicated that data and that kind of delay. So I'm not sure if the sponsor or the 4-Acre Group could answer that.
I'd be happy to take a crack.
Representative Hemshute.
Thank you, Chair Foster, through the chair. Niels Andreessen with the Municipal League is online as an invited testifier, and I'm pretty sure he'll be able to help with that.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Jimmy.
Boyana Co-Chair Foster. My question, nearly half of the nonprofits surveyed were afraid to put their name on their complaint. What does that say about the current relationship between the state and its partners, and how does this bill fix that?
Representative Hemshute.
Thank you.
Ms. Wolf.
Let's see, Representative Hemshute maybe first.
Thank you, through the chair. I think Ms. Wolf can speak to that equally as well as I can. I would just offer that that's the kind of the crux of the bill right there. Thank you.
Ms. Wolf, do you have any comments?
Through the chair, thank you. It's an important question, I think, being asked. The reason that 4-Acre has stepped in, as well as AML, as our partner, is because we just heard over and over and over again through our years of trying to make this right, that our nonprofits were afraid of retribution for speaking out. So it is the reason that we have stepped up and are protecting and speaking about the whole sector and the issues that impact the sector, as Niels is also doing on behalf of local governments. We have had some very brave people who have been willing to testify, but there are many more voices behind all of those brave voices. We hope that this bill fixes the problem for everyone. And again, that's why we've stepped up.
Another question.
Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Private construction contractors already get interest and penalties when the state pays late. Why have we treated nonprofits, tribes, and municipalities differently for this long?
That is for who, Representative Jimmy?
Ms. Wolf.
Ms. Wolf.
Through the chair, thank you. Well, that is exactly the question we are trying to answer ourselves. There's no current rules in the state of Alaska for them to do differently. So we are trying to rectify that very problem. We believe, and that's why we've called this bill a parity bill. We're just taking existing state statute and saying you should just treat us all the same.
Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. What does the state actually need to do? Staffing, technology, process to meet the 30-day deadline. Are the fiscal notes from the DOH reflecting a real gap, or is this doable within current operations?
Representative Hemshute.
Thank you, through the chair. We have a number of fiscal notes with this bill, and those will be addressed, I think, at the next hearing. But I would just add what we have heard, or we've been working on this bill for quite a while, through the chair. We've been hearing it's a question of personnel, staffing. It's a question of turnover, training, and equipment. So some departments have been able to pay on time. Some have minor arrears, and some have major. And each one has a different sort of issue. Oh, and the unification of the grants management system. Some states use one system and we have multiple systems is another issue.
Last question.
Representative Jimmy.
Co-chair. Boyana. If we don't pass this bill, what does the status quo cost for the state in the long run and in interest, lost partners, and disrupted services?
Representative Jimmy. Representative Hemshute.
Thank you, through the chair. I can't really guess at that. What I will tell you is the state might actually make money because when we don't pay it out, it's collecting interest somewhere. We've tried to calculate that and haven't really been able to come up with how much money we might be saving by not paying on time.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe we've got Representative or Ms. Wolf before us, and so maybe if we could maybe direct our questions to her for now, and then we'll come back to the sponsor here in a little bit. I've got in the queue Representative Moore, Representative Allard, Representative Stapp. So next up, Representative Moore.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I will hold my questions until they are ready for Representative Himshue.
Okay, thank you. Representative Ellard.
Thank you, and through the chair. So I don't know how to phrase these sort of questions, I guess. So I'm a little bit concerned that right now we're in a pretty, well, I think it might have improved, but through the chair. So Representative Himshue, we have here, and I think it's page 3, line 24 through 29. My concern is that we want the taxpayers to pay interest when we're actually doing nonprofits favors as well. So when we as a state come in and hire nonprofits or give nonprofits for them to be successful at what they want to do as grants or other means, and they come and say, hey, you owe us money, I understand that, but this isn't the state not paying. These are taxpayer. So we're putting the burden back on the taxpayer to fund the NGOs anyways. So if you say, hey, we're going to charge the state interest if they don't pay us on time, you're saying that you're going to charge the taxpayers interest because they're not getting paid on time, the nonprofits. It's
Representative Himshue.
Through the chair, I don't have the exact number, but a huge proportion of what we're talking about are federal funds. But when you talk about, Representative Allard, when you talk about taxpayers, as Alaskans, we don't have a statewide
we do pay taxes. Tax. But we pay taxes in other ways for our, whether it's through utilities, phones, or whether it's for the internet, and whether it's for roads, we do pay taxes. I hate when people say that. We might not have an obvious blanket tax of income tax or sales tax. We pay taxes or the state wouldn't be able to run. So if you look at 24 through 30, Representative Himshue, it doesn't say the federal government would pay interest. It's saying the state is going to pay interest or that state agency. Can you clarify what agent, is it any agency with it? Because I guess I would just be like, well, fine, nonprofits, go find somewhere else to raise your money.
Representative Himshue.
Thank you. Sure. Through the chair, these are, to Representative Allard, these are longstanding partnerships with the nonprofits, and many of them are doing work that we as a state can't do efficiently or choose not to do. So, for example, halfway houses. Another example would be Thread. So I can go on with a lot of examples of agencies doing the work that we are as a state probably not going to do as well as they do. They specialize. And then I guess I would add the funding has already been awarded. It's getting the funding out the door. And so I just want the state of Alaska to be the best business partner it can be and to reduce the burden on those organizations that are, I guess, carrying out some of the functions that we need in the state, services that we need in the state, on behalf of us, or perhaps better said, in place of the state.
I appreciate your response. And just a quick comment, I see there's organizations in here that our governor actually vetoed, and they're in here saying that they need more support financially from the taxpayers. Okay, thank you. Appreciate the explanation.
Okay. Representative Staff.
Yeah, thank you, Coach Foster. I have a question for Ms. Wolf, if she's still on the line through the chair.
Okay, Representative Staff.
Yeah, thank you, Coach Foster. Ms. Wolf, during your question, you mentioned that you were doing this because some nonprofits felt like they were going to have retribution from the state. That's a heck of a thing to say. Do you have any evidence of any of that through the chair?
Ms. Wolf?
Through the chair, thank you for that. I think we have lots of evidence of organizations being afraid to step up and speak up. Because unlike the way it was just momentarily characterized, we are partners with state government. We are doing the work on behalf of the state. And we are just looking for a good partner. And I think, you know, anyone that has run a successful business knows that, the relationships between your customer and your partner in getting the work done is essential. And, you know, difficult conversations are hard to have sometimes. So we are willing to step up and have those difficult conversations on behalf of all of the organizations. And we appreciate all of the people who have also been willing to step up and say that this is important. It's not a handout. It's not, It's not something for nothing. These are all organizations that are doing work as partners to the state of Alaska.
My fault, Mr. Kocher.
Representative Sale?
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Wolf. So just for the record, I think the state should pay its bills within a timely fashion. That was not what I asked you. I asked you, you said a little moment ago that you were doing this because clients, other members that you represent, were afraid of retribution from the state in the event that they said something. What do you mean by that? And do you have any evidence that any of these nonprofits are being threatened by state agency with retribution through the chair?
Ms. Representative Hemshoot first, and then we'll come back to Ms. Wolf. Representative Hemshoot.
Thank you, Chair Foster. I just want to point out that we, too, Representative Stapp, we attempted to find private contractors who would speak to this to find out if they have been, you know, the one section of statute that says you'll be paid interest penalty if the state is late with their payments. We tried to find folks under that current statute who've been paid late, and they were unwilling. We were unable to find anyone willing to speak up. So we're hearing that it has been a problem, but we can't get anyone on the record because of the fear of retribution. So whether it's actually happening, could happen, or is just a fear that people have, I know from our efforts to find someone, people were, I guess, reticent.
Representative Stapp.
I'd like to go to hear from Ms. Wolf, please.
Ms. Wolf.
Thank you, through the chair. I have no evidence of anyone being threatened or harassed or anything of that nature. I have just had lots of conversations with lots of people who asked Foraker to step up because they felt unwilling or scared to step up themselves.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Wolf.
Okay. Next up, I have Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Chair Foster. I was going to ask Ms. Wolf for further clarification, but she just offered it. So instead, I'll ask her a different question. Ms. Wolf, have you seen the 15 fiscal notes?
Through the chair, yes, we have seen them.
Follow up.
Before I become a student of the fiscal notes, Ms. Wolf, is there a reason, is there some pattern I'll find as to why seven of them are departments asking for money and eight of them are departments saying we don't need any money? Is there some pattern that you've identified?
Through the chair, we have not identified a clear pattern, but I would also say I'm not completely surprised by that because every department in the state of Alaska has a different process. We don't have one system in which we deliver grants, contracts, and reimbursements. So I am not surprised that there are different responses from different departments.
New question, rather.
Sure. Representative Joseph.
Ms. Wolf, could you offer the names or the issues, that's not the word I'm looking for, but basically the names of some nonprofits that might surprise the committee as to the nature of their work. Sponsor Hemshoot mentioned a couple, but can you name some others that might surprise this body as to the nature of their work, notwithstanding that they are nonprofits, and ways in which they assist the state in functioning?
Through the chair, that's an enormous question. Nonprofits are woven throughout the fabric of our everyday lives across Alaska. It's almost impossible to go through a single day in Alaska without being impacted by a nonprofit in some way. I'm not suggesting in a litany that everyone is impacted by delayed payment. Not everybody gets payment from the state, but, you know, nonprofits in Alaska do everything from, you know, your electricity in your home to childcare to housing to senior services, food security, affordable housing, reform, prevention, domestic violence, sexual assault, you name it, education of various shapes and sizes. I mean, there are literally thousands of nonprofits operating in the state of Alaska every day to support the people and our way of life across Alaska. And again, I'll also just remind us that this is not just a bill that says that the state of Alaska should be a good partner to its nonprofit partner, to its nonprofits, but it should also be a good partner to its local governments and its tribal organizations. We're all in this work together to make our Alaska communities work.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Moore and then Steph.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair, we have six departments that didn't report a fiscal note. Do we know why?
Is this for Representative Hemshoot?
Through the chair, Representative Moore, I need a little bit of clarification. Did you say divisions or departments?
Representative Moore?
Divisions, sorry.
Okay.
Representative Hemshoot?
Thank you. Through the chair, I think we have fiscal notes from all of the departments. I can't, maybe not all of them. Could I let my staff, Ella Lubin, speak to this? She's been managing the fiscal notes. There have been a lot of them.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Ms. Lubin, if you could put yourself on the record.
For the record, Ella Lubin, staff to Representative Hemshoot. Through the chair, Representative Moore, six of those fiscal notes that we do have are from the Department of Health, one for each division. So I believe you're correct that not every department has submitted a fiscal note. And we have tried to get information from some of them, but have not been successful.
Follow up. Are we going to continue trying to get those so we can follow through on this bill, or where are we at?
Ms. Lubin.
Thank you. Through the chair, we will work with the committee to do so. Yeah.
Thank you.
Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I got two lines of questioning here. First is going to be to, I guess, to Representative Hemshoot and Ms. Lubin. By the way, thanks for being here, folks. Wonderful to see you at House Finance today. So first question to, I guess, Ms. Lubin, unless Representative Hemshoot wants to take it. So I'm interested if you have looked at impacts on state-owned corporations like the Alaska Railroad or ADA, you know, I don't know if they make late payments, but I'm curious if you had taken into account our state-owned enterprise and if they pay third-party vendors and if this legislation would affect them at all. Through the chair.
Representative Hemshoot.
Thank you, Chair Foster. Through the chair to Representative Stapp. Great question. We have not looked at that. I'm kind of thinking that they're quasi, like they're independent agencies, but we can definitely look into it. Thank you.
Thank you. And fault, Mr. Co-Chair.
Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you. Can I get Courtney Enright to come to the dais?
Ms. Enright, if you could put yourself on the record. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair to Ms. Enright. Well, clearly, based on the paperwork, one department struggles with this more than the other. So through the chair to Ms. Enright, I don't think you guys want to not pay payments promptly. So what is actually happening within the divisions in the health department that we're behind? And maybe you could state for the record, I have a pretty good grasp of this, but I think it would be helpful for the people in the committee to know exactly what is happening and why we're not paying super timely through the chair.
Ms. Enright, if you could put yourself on the record.
For the record, Courtney Enright, Legislative Liaison for the Department of Health. I'd actually like to pull Pam Halloran, who is our assistant commissioner and operates these structures, up to help answer that. She's far more knowledgeable than I am.
Yeah, that works.
Okay. Halloran, if you could put yourself on the record.
For the record, Pam Halloran, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Health. Courtney had this, but I'm happy to help. So we definitely did not want to turn in six fiscal notes. That was our reality as a department. We've had some operational challenges, some goals. I can take you through our methodology. I could take you through the contributing factors. I can take you through things that we're doing better to prevent this from happening very soon. But I can tell you that this is not the reality that we want to see as a department.
Yeah, fault, Mr. Co-Chair.
Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair. Through the chair to the deputy commissioner. So my philosophy on this is I really do not want to pass a law saying we got to have prompt payment, right? So I know that you guys are not paying because you have lots of challenges within the department. So other than pass a bill, say you need to do something and then incur a bunch of penalties and have to pay a bunch of money, what action can we take, perhaps maybe outside this bill or in our budget to help you guys facilitate a more prompt and reliable payment system, so we don't have to pass a law that we know that's not going to work, solve the problem, through the chair.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp. First, we don't want to be here. Absolutely. I ran a nonprofit myself for 8 years. I understand what our nonprofits are against. We, as far as what you can do, I think that we're implementing some things in our department already ourselves to prevent this, training. So, and our retention rate, we're having one of the contributing factors that we've determined was part of this was overall capacity of our staff and, training staff on our very complex accounting system every time we have a turnover. So we need time. We need to train. We need time. We need, and then the things that we're implementing is that we're leveraging our accounting system better. We're actually entering a project that's going to be fully launched by July 1, where our divisions are actually going to be entering transactions directly into the accounting system at the division level. Before, there was an extra process where they were putting them in a finance portal, which was very far away from the division. So if a payment erred for some reason, the budget wasn't where it was supposed to be, it took time to email the division, get that coding, get that back. Now divisions are going to see that real time. And so we need time. I think that we're also doing one more thing that I'm proud of. We're doing scorecards for our divisions on a monthly basis, which is on timely payment. So our divisions now know exactly where they are, and they're kind of excited to see themselves improving over time. So that's what we need.
If I might add one thing, Courtney Enright, Legislative Liaison, Department of Health.
Is Ms. Enright?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, I think part of the reason you see the Department of Health in this particular area is that during COVID, we had to move billions of dollars through our system. And so we have burnt out a lot of our long-term staff. We're really grateful for the ones that are still here. But we've had a particularly high turnover rate in those staff that have had to process pieces. And I think what you see reflected is a reality of where we are in the rebuilding process.
Follow up, Mr. Kutcher.
Representative
Stapp. Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. So, on that kind of the same line, I appreciate all the things that you guys are doing. I will point out, I don't see, in my perfect world, we would get you folks at the Department of Health kind of on a better pathway, so we don't need a law saying pay people on time. And I don't see a lot of requests for, any asks in the 27 budget from the departments regarding this specific issue. I do see them all in this bill saying that, hey, this is what you will need to help people pay on time. So again, I'm going to go back to, if there's not a personnel ask specifically, what can we do to help you folks at the health department, you know, have a better than, let's say, one of these is net 98 days. How do we get you from net 98 to net 60, for example, in this coming fiscal year, through the chair?
Ms. Halloran?
Yeah, through the chair, Reverend Stapp, I'm going to have to think about that one for a moment. I mean, I already said that we need time to have our scorecards, to make this problem extremely visible to our staff and to make them want to improve. Training, you know, we're working off an accounting system that was purchased or launched in 2017. We could improve training for our staff. We could talk to the Department of Administration for online videos about how to pay invoices within the accounting system, how to manage budgets within the accounting system. So we could look at that. We could look at enhanced training within the Department of Administration.
And last fault, Mr. Co-Chair.
Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you for that answer. And I'm going to come back to this because it was put on the record by our testifier had mentioned that the Foraker group was basically doing this because they had nonprofits that they felt would have retribution in the event that they brought it up. And I just want to give you guys the opportunity to articulate your point of view to something like that. I can't imagine that you would actively seek retribution for struggling with making a payment. So through the chair.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, I'm not aware of any retribution for nonprofits.
Thank you.
We have strayed. I'm going to try to bring this back here. We're under invited testimony. And so if we have questions for Ms. Wolf, I'm going to hold off on any other questions unless they're for Ms. Wolf, and we can come. I'll keep people in the queue if it's questions for the departments, questions for fiscal notes, questions for the sponsor. I'll keep everyone's names in the queue. Representative Hannon Josephson, do you have questions for Ms. Wolf?
No, thank you. Mine was for Ms. Halloran when we have her back.
Okay. And also Representative Josephson?
Well, my question was more for Assistant Commissioner Halloran as well. But just to confirm with Ms. Wolf, Ms. Wolf, you said you've been working on this with the state, presumably one agency or another, multiple agencies, for 6 years. Is that what you said,
Ms. Wolf?
Through the chair, yes, that's correct.
Follow up.
What I heard the assistant commissioner, one could say bravely, say is that the complaints, I'm paraphrasing, are legitimate. Is that what you heard her say as well,
Ms. Wolf?
Through the chair, yes, that's what I heard her say. And we have heard that somewhat from a few other commissioners. I mean, not commissioners, but staffers as well during these hearings and on the record.
Representative Josephson?
Yeah, through the chair, Ms. Wolf, do you know, does the state's concern with interest and penalties as to for-profits, does that have the desired effect for the state? Does it result in prompt payment, if you know?
Through the chair, I do not have that data, but we have tried. We believe that the carrot and the stick moment is important. We're pleased to hear that the Department of Health is holding some accountability, but I don't know what that looks like in the for-profit arena. Perhaps our sponsor has more research than I do.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Tomaszewski, question.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Representative Tomaszewski. Yeah, this is a question for Mrs. Wolf. So I've worked with private contractors before as a contractor myself, and I go into those contracts kind of knowing the terms. I've worked with contractors that only pay quarterly. And so I know that if I get my if I submit my request for payment on the 1st of April, I may not get paid. I probably won't get paid until the first week of July. So my question is, do these contractors go into these contracts knowing the terms, and are they explicitly laid out before you would actually get and sign on that line for this contract?
Ms. Wolf?
Through the chair, well, first of all, I'd love to say that there's one way that this goes, but there's not one way. Let's remember, every department in the state of Alaska has a different process. And many of our organizations are dealing with many different funding sources from many different departments. So every relationship would be slightly different. But there is an expectation of a timely payment because there is an expectation of a timely reporting mechanism. And as I mentioned in my testimony, we have organizations who are regularly having to report on money they never received so that they can be in line for the next tranche of money that they should receive. So it is clearly outlined. The steps for reporting are clearly outlined. You would expect that that reporting would align to a payment process, but the payment and the reporting are not in sync. So I think what's happening is, our nonprofits they have begun to accept a reality that they're not going to get paid, but that's certainly not acceptable, nor is it articulated upfront.
Follow up.
Representative Tomaszewski.
So the bill states the contract will be paid within 30 calendar days. So what you're saying is essentially that of the multiple different agencies dealing in multiple different contracts, there is no standardized process to expect your payment.
Well, that through the chair, that is the expectation of why we wrote this bill, so that there would be a standardized expectation of 30 days. That's the very reason that we're doing this, is to hold one set of standards that everyone can hold themselves accountable to.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Representative Ballard.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I'm hoping that I can have the individuals, Ms. Harlan, or I can't remember her last name, if she could come back and speak in regards to what we're talking about right now, and that's the standard payment. So where I think, if I'm hearing right, the testifier is saying that we wanted to make sure that everybody has the same standard in every department to pay the nonprofits correctly, right? Is that what you're saying, Ms. Wolf?
Ms. Wolf.
Through the chair, I'm saying to pay all of the entities that the state does business with, nonprofits, local governments, tribal organizations, everyone.
The same, meaning from the same system, or treat them all the same equally?
Ms. Wolf.
Or both?
Ms. Wolf?
Thank you. Through the chair, I'm not sure of the distinction that's trying to be made here. I'll refer to the sponsor.
Representative Ballard.
I mean, Ms. Wolf, are you the expert on this? I'm trying, you just kind of said a few things, and I'm just trying to find out. Are you saying I heard you say that the contractors get paid probably better or more timely than the nonprofits, and I'm trying to find out, are you asking also in this bill that the departments are all aligned with in the avenue in which they pay the nonprofits?
Ms. Wolf.
Through the chair, yes, we're asking for a standard from the state of Alaska to all the entities it does business with, nonprofits, tribal organizations, and municipalities.
Okay. So I think part of my, and I can reference and speak with Ms. Representative Hemshoot through the chair. I think part of my concern about that is every department gets their funds differently, and every department has a different avenue of how they pay out based on their independence, because everybody's money comes differently. And I'm concerned about that within this. Could you help me if there's a way we could tweak that? Or how do you think, Representative Hemshoot, that we're going to get every individual department to do it the same? We can't. They get their money differently, and they have different rules for every single department. How could we work on that?
Representative Hemshoot.
Thank you. Through the chair, to Representative Allard. That is correct. Every department has different parameters they're working within, but setting a standard of 30 days, if they can do it for private contractors, they should be able to do it for nonprofits, tribal organizations, and municipalities. And I'll add to that, some states have a unified grants management system where they are kind of working on the same system.
Yeah.
And we do not have that in Alaska.
I know that we do for the municipality. May I, Chair?
Representative Allard.
Representative Hemshoot, did you get anything from any of the departments to say why they delay paying the nonprofits versus the contractors?
Representative Hemshoot.
Thank you for the question through the chair to Representative Allard. Yes, it's a lot of different issues. So again, each department is different. In one department, they need more staff. In one department, they need more training. In one department, okay, they need more technology.
Okay.
I would like to add one thing that I should have said from the get-go and just forgot to comment on. And that is, this is a longstanding issue. This is not tied to any particular administration. This has been a problem for decades. Yeah. And then I also wanted to add, I want to be really clear that this is not a failure of the personnel in the departments. That has not been brought up, but at no point have they said, our people just don't do their job very well. No one is saying that. It has to do with other issues having to do with technology, turnover, et cetera. So it's different in each department.
Just a follow-up comment.
Representative Ballard.
Representative Hemshoot, thank you for that. And I think you kind of hit it on the head that every department has their own issues. And so making a blank bill saying, hey, we should just do it. This is if you don't pay us within 30 days, because some departments are struggling too. Okay. I appreciate your comments. Thank you, Representative.
Okay. Questions for Ms. Wolf. We're going to go to Representative Schrage.
Thank you actually for the bill sponsor, if I may. This bill has been repeatedly described in terms of parity. Can you remind me, there is already a blanket standard today for private contractors and payment to private contractors and entities. Is that correct?
Through the chair, I'd have to look up the statute, but that is correct. It's private contractors completing public works have a standard of, I'm going to say 30 days, but it depends if the funding source is federal, it's 30, and if it's state, it's 21, but, or I might have that reversed. Yeah, and the statute is AS 36.90.200.
Follow up. Yeah, thank you. I bring this up just because I think the concern about all the different ways in which departments might receive money that they are then passing through or using to pay whatever entity it might be is a valid concern that's been highlighted by my colleague from Eagle River. But I think what kind of recenters me on this bill is that we already have a standard that takes that nuance into account and that already exists for our payments to private entities. It's just these nonprofit entities that don't have that standard, don't have that surety of prompt payment, or at least some level of surety, if not complete surety. So, thank you for that. That helps clarify things for me.
Thank you for the question.
Okay. Did you have Representative Hemshoot? Did you have any comments on that?
No, nothing. Okay. Nothing. I think that's a good framing of the situation.
Okay.
Thank you.
I want to be fair. We're going off script here, and so I just want to make sure that if we're going to open it up to folks, then we do that. And so I want to come back to Representative Hannon. You had a question for Ms. Halloran. Ms. Halloran, if you could please come up.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Ms. Halloran, one of the things that we're seeing in other parts of the state budget is a return to departments, to many departments, including yours, payroll, accounting personnel, etc. Do you think that in those people being placed back at your department, it will help your variety of divisions expedite the prompt payment piece?
Ms. Halloran.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I'm glad you asked that question. We've been talking internally at the department. We have five positions coming to us, and we have six divisions. So we are going to two divisions have decided not to accept a position for whatever reason, but we're taking those five positions, and we're giving one to fiscal. And because we're doing the new process where items will be certified in the divisions, then they'll go to fiscal for the final approval. So we're, one of those positions is going to go to fiscal. The other four are going to go to our divisions with the more lengthy payment timelines. And we do hope that that will help.
Follow up.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. And Ms. Halloran, I appreciate that. But because of my ignorance of some of the verbiage internal to your agency, would that fiscal processing, so the contract with a nonprofit, let's just, you know, was let on August 1st. And so when they then submit for a bill to be paid, is fiscal at the end of that process once the nonprofit is asked for a bill payment, or by executing a contract that says you're going to be doing this and you've set out that payments are going to be quarterly or monthly or twice a year? Is that all included at the origination of the contract, or is fiscal touching it at two parts in the process, or just at the end when it's ready to be paid?
Ms. Halloran.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, for our grants, if we're going to speak specific to grants right now, our grants are advanced on a quarterly basis. Whether or not we're actually going to incorporate the in-division entry for grants, I believe that will still happen in the grants team. Fiscal will touch those four times, actually five times, because we advance 25% each quarter. That last quarter, we advance 20%, and then we hold back 5% for the final reconciliation piece. So there's a lot of pieces that have to happen to issue that grant, at least is the approved budget. So we issue an award to a grantee, and then we work with the grantee to finalize that grant budget. At that point, once that report is approved, that sets the clock for the payment to that first grant. For each other quarterly grant, the reports that we receive from the grantees on a quarterly basis will again set the clock for that grant payment, and we advance our grants on a quarterly basis.
Thank you.
Okay. Do we have any further questions for Ms. Wolf or anyone else? Okay, seeing none. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I didn't have any questions for Ms. Wolf, and I know that this is an introduction, but I was hoping to ask just a couple quick questions of the sponsor of the bill.
Sure, Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair, Representative Hemshute and staff. Thank you very much for bringing this forward. I know when I initially heard of this, I got to thinking, I was like, yeah, we need to make sure that we're being prompt in our payments. I haven't had a full opportunity to go through the full bill, so I'll just lead off with that. I'm looking forward to really digging into it. But I did have just a couple quick questions. When we talk about the bill in front of us, we're trying to say that we are aligning, we're basically aligning what we do potentially in contracts with grants and other things, other payments and other services that are being provided. And I was just hoping you might be able to talk a little bit about how we might differ in grants versus, say, contracts. Because when we do contracts, we have explicit language within the contract when we issue those contracts to a vendor or to an individual to have specific performance metrics. And we have very clear elements within those contracts on how payments are to be made, whether they're electronically or check system or whatever it's going to be. And I'm just trying to align that with what we're actually doing in grant systems. And I ask that because when I look at the federal system, there's federal law that dictate what we do in actual contracts versus what we do in an appropriation for a grant. And there is no obligation in the federal government to give you grant money in any particular time frame, even if you qualify. But there is the obligation under contractual situation. So I was hoping that you might be able to describe those differences a little bit and then how you think this bill will align those different things.
Representative Hemshue.
Thank you. Through the co-chair to Representative Bynum. I am assuming that grants also have parameters written up and, you know, you apply and then based on certain standards, you're awarded the grant. And so it effectively is the same as a contract. All this bill does is set a timeline. And so, I don't know that we need to get into that specific language that you're asking for. Happy to take a closer look, of course. But I think that the bill basically says if we're going to be a partner with a tribal organization or a municipality or a nonprofit, we need to be able to deliver on our agreements with them in the same timeline that we do our contracts with private contractors.
Okay. Appreciate that. I have another question.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair. Thank you, Representative, for that. One of the other things I was wondering about is when we talk about our particular programs that we have, a lot of times we have partnership with federal program, and the state is being an agent to administer those programs, which then might have an agreement with a provider. And obviously we want to make sure that we have prompt payment, but there are circumstances where the federal government prohibits using federal monies for interest penalties. So under those circumstances, would we then be saying that the state would take on the financial liability of these penalties?
Representative Hemshue.
Thank you. Through the co-chair to Representative Bynum, I like that you said, obviously, we should be paying promptly. So I think that is a common sense statement. And to my knowledge, and we can check further, but to my knowledge, yes, this could be something the state would need to assume the liability for.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, next up, I've got Representative Josephson and then Galvin. Representative Josephson.
Yes. Representative Hemshute, a couple of things. You cited 3690-200 payment deadline and interest in public construction contracts. And I see here there are no fewer than three or four references to grant money. And I'd have to study this to see if that's interchangeable with contracts. It seems to link itself to political subdivisions using grant money, which would be local governments as I'm reading this. So I'm not sure without a careful study of this, whether this statute as exists means to make a difference there. But I'm noting something here that is remarkable. And it says, if I might, Mr. Chairman, at subsection C of 3690-200, It notes that it's a long sentence, but toward the back of the bottom of the sentence, within 8 working days after receipt of the payment, the contractor requests the state or political subdivision shall – or I get – let me do this again. If part or all of a payment is going to be withheld for unsatisfactory performance, or if the payment request made under this section does not comply with the requirement of the contract, in other words, the state is unhappy about something, within 8 working days after receipt of the payment, request the state or political subdivision shall notify the prime contractor in writing, stating specifically why part or all of the payment is being withheld, and what this is the key, and what remedial actions may be taken by the prime contractor to receive full payment. So this is that was clumsy, but this is laid out for for-profit agencies like a red carpet. It's like, tell us, first we'll tell you if we are unhappy with your services in any way. You'll get notice of that. And then you can tell us why we're wrong about that. And we'll tell you if we think that we're right about that, how you can remedy your performance. So it's this back and forth interaction with for-profit contractors that appreciates the work of a for-profit contractor, holds them in high regard, and I see that wholly missing as well. And I guess my question is, do you agree that you can see in the nature of this that it's not just about prompt payment for for-profits, it's about respect for profits? That's what I'm reading here. Does that something you wanted to comment on?
Representative Himshoot.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the Co-Chair to Representative Josephson. Yes, on page 2 of House Bill 133, that exact same standard is set for, again, the nonprofits, municipalities, and tribal organizations. For exactly the reasons you stated.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up, I have Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. And I can hold my questions since I know there are folks waiting to testify. So if that is better, then I'm happy to wait until we've heard from, especially AML, since I think their voice here is so helpful to the conversation. So thank you.
Did you have any questions for Ms. Wolf?
No.
No questions?
Thank you.
Okay. And we are actually going over to AML next. So just wanted to look around really quick, make sure we're not missing anything. So with that, Mr. Nils, thank you so very much, Ms. Lori Wolf, for being online. Appreciate it. And next we have Mr. Nils Andreasen, the Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal League. Mr. Andreasen, if you could put yourself on the record and provide your testimony, and then after that we'll go to questions.
Yeah, thank you. Co-chairs and members of the House Finance Committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Wonderful. My name is, for the record, my name is Nils Andreasen. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal League, established to strengthen and support Alaska's 165 local governments. It feels like at this point you've covered a lot of ground, but I'm going to cover some of the same ground and hopefully be able to additionally answer some of the questions that are out there. But we're here to talk about prompt payment failure, late state payments. And based on some of the conversation that has already occurred during this meeting, I want to be really clear about what that looks like. So whether it's a contract or a grant, the state has entered into an obligation with an entity to provide a service on behalf of the state. Once that service is provided or along the way and consistent with either the grant or the contract, the local government, the nonprofit, the private sector contractor, the tribe submits to the state an invoice or a request for reimbursement. At that point, the state determines whether those costs were consistent with the contract or grant agreement, eligible for reimbursement as either a contract or through grant, and that is when the 30-day clock should start. That's what we're talking about here. I think one of the things that concerned me maybe from the conversation prior to my testimony has been that the state might be waiting for federal reimbursement prior to paying what it is legally obligated to fulfill. And I think that's not how I understand most grant arrangements to work with. Ultimately, these are the state's responsibilities. They are the entering contractee. They're the ones committing to fulfill their side of the deal, which is funding, paying for those services provided. They might separately and later request reimbursement or the funds necessary from the federal government, but that's a cash management issue and different than what we're talking about here. Ultimately, this is the state's obligation. And fixing it matters for the basic reliability of public services statewide. AML is coming at this from a number of angles, most prominently community assistance, but also areas that we've heard from our members, shared taxes, wildlife, wildfire reimbursement for local fire departments, and public transit. We want to emphasize scope. In recent Alaska surveys, delayed payments were attributed to multiple departments, with respondents naming health, education, transportation, family community services among most common. These impacts are hitting organizations across Alaska from the spectrum of state agencies. And it's encouraging to hear that some of the agencies that have responded to the request for fiscal notes have been able to say zero, which should mean that they're generally doing a good job. And for those, and that's not, I'm not judging one agency over another, but they're doing a good job in meeting that that deadline, or could, feel like they could. And for those who submit fiscal notes that require more funding to fulfill this basic obligation of state government, it simply means that they probably need that funding, but years of cost cutting hasn't improved their efficacy and instead has limited their capacity to fulfill these obligations. So there's two key problems. One's a coverage gap. Nonprofits, municipalities, Alaska Native organizations deliver services and projects through an agreement with the state, grants or contracts that are not covered by the same enforceable prompt payment framework allowed to the private sector. The legislative record states plainly that unlike private construction contracting, there's no accountability mechanism or consequence for the state when it delays payments to nonprofits, tribes, and municipalities. The second problem is enforceability. For many procurement purchases, interest is not automatic. The rules require the vendor to submit a written request for the interest after they finally get paid with documentation within a short deadline. That structure reduces accountability and shifts administrative burden onto those already carrying the cost of delay. So even to the extent that local governments or nonprofits or tribes are waiting for payment, it's still incumbent upon them, or the burden is shifted to them to keep asking for it, to make up the difference, or to request interest from the state if that were allowed. So the documented impacts are serious. These aren't minor inconveniences. Organizations, including local governments, are using reserves, taking lines of credit, delaying purchases, reducing staff, and sometimes pausing services until payment has arrived. You know, municipalities have warned that delayed state payments can lead to missed deadlines, increased costs, and significant cash flow challenges for local projects and services. A few examples have come to us from members from across the state. One member told us about their local fire department, which signs an annual cooperating agreement with the Alaska Division of Forestry and Fire Protection. The agreement covers roles in response to wildfires and reimbursement details between the volunteer fire department and the division. If the volunteer fire department commits resources past the initial response to a fire. Unfortunately, the local fire department regularly waits months for reimbursement, straining their ability to pay the personnel who staff the engines and provide a disincentive to work with the division. This is a long-term perennial issue, and these frontline workers, without the financial stability they should expect from their work. Another example from our membership. In a fishing community with fisheries harvest in 2025, the city will not receive payments for its share of the fisheries business tax until October 2026. That's a 9-month or more delay. The municipality has not told a number or a methodology for how the state calculates the apportionment of the tax, making it very hard to account for a somewhat predictable revenue figure in their operating budget. These share taxes are collected by the state for distribution to local governments, but the lag between that collection and ultimately the remittance generally benefits the state, creates uncertainty at the local level at the least. In other industries, this is unacceptable. The state's own fiscal notes show this is measurable and actionable, and we've covered that to a large extent already. We recognize that many projects are funded with state or federal grants and that agencies have a responsibility to ensure funds are spent appropriately before payments are made. Oversight and documentation are important, and local governments share that interest in protecting public funds. At the same time, the process must provide a reasonable level of certainty and timeliness for the communities and contractors doing that work, which means that ultimately that oversight and that due diligence needs to occur within that 30-day time period. And we assume in all of this that when an invoice is submitted or a request for reimbursement, it comes with all of the required documentation to fulfill the terms of the contract and the grants that these officials have read, understood, and ultimately delivered on. When reviews or approvals take unpredictable amounts of time, the financial burden shifts to municipalities and project partners who carry those costs while waiting for reimbursement. Establishing clearer timelines, consistent documentation standards, and more efficient payment processes across all agencies, and recognizing that they're all different, but standardizing those to allow for those differences to be overcome, helps to maintain accountability while ensuring that projects can move forward without unnecessary financial strain. For this committee's reference, community assistance might be pertinent. Here's an example that we received from a member, anonymized here. So out of all the payments this community receives from the state, community assistance takes the longest. By January 15th of each year, the department publishes population figures that are determined and required to be distributed to communities. The application period opens in February this year. Communities have to submit their initial application June 1st in time for the fiscal year that starts July 1st, when those funds technically become available. This year, the state transitioned to an online portal, as last year, I guess. This community followed all the steps and were in the award stage on August 27, 2025. A community assistance payment came to this community on October 15th, 45 days from the award date, nearly 9 months from their initial application. While this community has enough revenue to stretch and make do while waiting for funds, they expect similar concerns about communities that aren't in a similar position. Note that 3 AAC 180.120 allows the department to make a preliminary community assistance of payment if it is in the state's best interest, which we would argue at this point it is. These base payments could be available as soon as July 1. Since roughly 20, another example from a member has to do with public transit. Since roughly 2018, the Alaska Transit Office, which serves as the state's pass-through entity for federal transit administration funding, has struggled with consistent administrative and staffing capacity. As a result, grant agreements, reimbursements, and capital awards have not been executed in a timely or predictable way. That breakdown is directly affecting our community and transit systems across Alaska. As the pass-through entity, Alaska DOT is responsible for executing agreements, processing reimbursements, overseeing compliance, and administering capital awards. Those core functions have been delayed for several years due to staffing and unresolved internal administrative policy issues. One of our members reported that its FY26 FTA Section 5311 Rural Area Formula Program operating agreement was not executed until 8 months into the fiscal year. During that time, they couldn't submit for reimbursement. Once they were able to submit on an award, reimbursements have still been significantly delayed, in some cases for months. At the same time, Alaska provides zero match for rural transit, yet controls the timing of federal fund distribution, one of the few states in the nation that provides nothing. This leaves municipalities and nonprofits carrying both the required local match and the cash flow burden. This is not a funding increase request. It's a request for functional administration so state and federal dollars can reach Alaska communities as intended. Yes, it comes with a cost. Many departments have pointed to, or divisions have pointed to, the need for increased capacity. AML supports prompt payment of clear deadlines and enforceable penalties for grants, reimbursements, and contracts. We recommend improving the design, make penalties automatic when they are due, rather than requiring vendors to request them after the fact. We recognize that state agencies are working hard within given time restraints, but the system itself can shift financial burdens onto municipalities and contractors, and this is what it's doing. One tool that many states use to address this issue, this challenge, is allowing advance payments or mobilization payments. Advance payments are common practice in many state systems and federal infrastructure programs. They allow projects and programs to start more quickly, reduce financing costs built into bids, and expand participation from smaller and local entities. Advanced payments retain state oversight, but shift it from both sides of the agreement to just one, reducing overall workload for agencies. grantees or recipients are managed effectively for risk and compliance, and the state is able to maintain its fiduciary responsibilities. AML recommends transparency. Alaska does not appear to have a statewide standardized tracking system for delayed payments. It's encouraging to hear the Department of Health talk about something specific to their internal process. We urge the legislature to require quarterly reporting by agency and program. Make that more transparent for all of us. Days to pay, percent on time, total interest and penalties owed and paid, and the main causes of delay. Alaska has statutory grounding for a public financial transactions website. We can build on that. Finally, we urge a constructive approach. It's not about blaming one agency or even one administration. The legislative record is clear. Most of the problem has spanned multiple administrations and requires a system-wide response. Prompt payment is a basic government performance requirement. Fixing it strengthens service delivery, protects essential services, reduces hidden financing costs, and improves vendor participation and competition statewide. Alaska's communities are ready to partner with the state to deliver infrastructure that supports transportation, energy, water systems, and economic development. Ensuring that payment systems work efficiently is a practical step toward achieving those goals. Thank you, and we stand ready to work with the legislature and the administration on a comprehensive, practical solution.
Thank you so very much, Mr. Andreasen. We do have some questions in the lineup. I've got three people so far. It's Representative Galvin, Representative Hannon, Representative Bynum. So first we'll go to Representative Galvin.
Thank you. Thanks for being here, Mr. Andreasen. And my question is around, because you, in your work, are, I think you have a good oversight of this problem in terms of whether for-profit municipalities, even private industry. So I understand that the state of Alaska, in some areas, we seem to be doing a great job with prompt payment, I'm guessing, given that we don't have fiscal notes for some. And that's just a guess. And then in others, we are looking to improve. And I guess what I'm curious to know is if you have seen with your experience that there is a bigger problem with the for-profit versus nonprofit, or are you seeing this within every organization in terms of prompt payment?
Mr. Andreasen?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Galvin. I can only speak for local governments, and I understand, from their perspective, the experience that they're having, which is increasingly challenging in getting payment for any type of agreement they have with the state in a timely fashion. I really want to focus on my area of my lane, as it were, and avoid speaking for the private sector or other sectors. Though clearly we've been working closely with Foraker Group and understand, the same experience at the nonprofit level.
Thank you. And follow up, if I may, with regard to some of the examples that you gave, I heard fire department, I heard areas around transit and services, getting folks from here to there, quite a few different areas that I think most Alaskans expect, for the trains to run on time, if you will. In other words, these are organizations kind of keeping our communities working. And are most of these carrying an 8-month some kind of a reserve? I guess that's really my biggest question, because that you mentioned reserve and taking money from that in order to keep the train on time, if you will. Is that something that most of these organizations have?
Mr. Andreasen?
Yeah. Representative Galvin, through the chair, it really varies. There are some who have a tax base, and so either their sales tax or other types of broad-based tax are bringing in revenue each month that helps sustain them and helps offset some of the obligations they might otherwise be expecting from the state. Others don't have that same tax base, nor do they have reserves. And often in that case, it's what you get is kind of a trickle-down effect, non-payment of large bills, a delayed payment for things like property insurance, There's really a ripple effect across the system. And it's not just impacting local governments, but impacting local governments' ability to pay in a timely manner as well. So it's varied, and I think every jurisdiction comes to it a little bit differently in how they cover for the state in this circumstance. Some more resourced than others and able to do that, but it's not sustainable.
My last question, if I may.
Representative Galvin.
Mr. Andreessen, you've been here for quite some time, and I think you may have seen or at least spoken to elders and others who have been here for quite a while. Is this a problem, the prompt payment piece, that you see is becoming more of an issue than in the past?
Mr. Andreessen?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Galvin. I want to maybe focus my response to community assistance, and we've had this conversation with the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, that yes, in these last few years, community assistance payments are taking longer than they used to. And that really drove our interest in this topic. You know, 3-4 plus years ago, payments to local governments were coming out more in like August. And over the last few years, it's been more like October, November. And there's reasons for some of that, and there's not a good reason for it otherwise. So we understand that the department, there's requirements that come with submitting, for community assistance. But even once those requirements are filled, we should expect timely payment from there. And that's what's being delayed or even, and so there's roughly a three month window that's kind of increased over the last few years that we're trying to close that gap.
Thank you, Mr. Andreessen, through the chair. Can you describe for this committee what community assistance means to Alaskans? I know it's a lot of different things, but if you could describe what we see from it as we invest in community assistance, what does that mean to Alaska?
Mr. Andreessen.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Galvin, I like to think of community assistance as keeping the lights on in our local government. It's a base payment that goes to cities and boroughs, and there's a multiplier based on the number of people living in those communities. But it helps for many communities. It actually tangibly keeps the lights on. It can be as much as 80%. Of a city's budget. It can be as little as 0.01% of a municipal budget. So it matters differently to different local governments, but often it's filling holes that taxes would otherwise, or where there's not a tax base, it provides a very necessary function. So it allows local governments to function as political subdivisions of the state to provide services like water, sewer, landfill, to manage elections, and to be a good partner of the state.
Okay, thank you very much. That's quite a bit of an answer to that. I can see that matters a lot, and I would hate to be holding that up. And I can understand this is a very complicated problem to solve. And I'm grateful to the right sponsor of this bill, because this is key. And that's all I have for Mr. Andreessen. I do have other thoughts and questions for the maker related to what other states are doing, but I can hold on that. Thank you.
Well, I was going to encourage, if you had questions, feel free to ask them, but I did want to maybe, Mr. Andreessen, if I could just add, maybe you may have said this earlier on, but in terms of the importance of what community assistance does, especially in our small villages where, you know, this assistance makes up a good portion of their funds. You know, there's a lot of requirements out there, for example, paperwork that, you know, goes along with maintaining a landfill, you know, and everything that goes along with running, you know, Village Safe Water, and making sure that you're sticking to the grant funding that you receive from the Village Safe Water program. And there's just so much out there, and I just wanted to underscore the importance of the folks who are out there supporting those efforts. And so let's see. Did you want to follow up, or did you want to hold off on some of your questions?
Okay.
Okay, we'll come back to you. Representative Hannon, and then Bynum. I've got Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. My first set of questions, Mr. Andreessen has already addressed because they were about the community assistance. But I am going to plant the seed that I'm hoping that the Department of Commerce, Community, Economic Development can answer, and they don't have to do it now to disrupt this flow, but the same question that I asked of the Department of Health and Community Health and Ms. Halloran's department. So my question for DCCED would be, will the restoration to their agency of payroll and accounting personnel help the department get back to what existed 2 years ago, where the community assistance payments were going out in a pretty timely fashion, as opposed to now several months delayed? But my second department question for Mr. Andreessen, where he spoke specifically to fish tax, which I would believe is collected by the Department of Revenue. And he described that it's not getting to local governments back in a timely fashion. And I'm wondering, Mr. Andreessen, if you could address whether, similar to the community assistance program, has it always been delayed, or is that over the last couple fiscal years that what had been a fairly regular, and again, fish tax is a little complicated because you're reporting at the processor, but to any coastal community that is collecting fish tax, every community understands how important that is to their overall budget and ability to execute their annual budget. And I'm wondering if those delays are a new phenomenon or if it's always been months and months of delay from the Department of Revenue to share back to local governments their percentage of fish tax that is owed to them.
Mr. Andreessen?
Yeah, Representative Hannon, through the chair. I am not sure if this is a new phenomenon. There's always been a lag between when taxes are collected by the state on behalf of local governments and distributed, because it goes through the legislative process. So ultimately, the department's waiting for the legislature to adopt the budget and, you know, come into the next fiscal year. I think in my mind, and I think what I'm hearing from members is, okay, so assume that needs to happen. As of July 1st, what should be available? What's been adopted in the budget for distribution, and what should be our expectation to remit those funds to local governments who have been really waiting on them since throughout that prior year? And it seems like the time between July 1 and October is maybe too long. So I think what we're talking about is accelerating the distance between those two and really bringing them closely. And if it's a 30-day window that could occur, that certainly brings to local governments revenue that for many coastal communities they're entirely dependent on or mainly dependent on. And that's paying the bills, right? That's paying for insurance and healthcare and into retirement systems and for school construction and major maintenance. So it's really base funding that needs to come out earlier. We understand the lag between when it's collected in the prior fiscal year and when it needs to be available July 1. Beyond that, there should be a lot less of a gap.
Thank you, Mr. Andreessen. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. And I guess just to make sure that Mr. Andreessen knows that with regard to the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, their fiscal note is zero for reporting that they could come into compliance with the bill. So I think we heard it from one state agency, but I presume that state agencies want to be promptly paying their bills, and I want to just make sure that we're giving them the tools to do that. And if we need a statutory stick as well as a carrot to do that, I can support the bill, but I want to make sure that we're giving them resources to do it. And I suspect that restoring accounting services to departments where they can do it in a more timely fashion is a piece of that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Next up, we've got Representative Bynum and Galvin. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair, Mr. Andreessen. Thank you for being here. Miss having you here in person, but being on the phone will do. Really quick, I was just kind of your perspective is what I'm looking for here. We know that when we look at the state agencies in a lot of cases that they aren't really built to operate around specific timelines, specifically when it comes to program review, technical approvals, dealing with financial approvals and payment systems when we talk about the appropriations process. And a lot of times there's municipal governments that are relying on funding to come in that are subject to either something based in law that then rely on an appropriation. And so to me, that's a little bit different in the sense of what we're doing when we appropriate money and then we issue contracts. So I was wondering if you thought that maybe because of a lack of a regulatory structure and or an agency structure in place to accommodate the specifics of this bill, do you think that the 30 days might be a little aggressive and that having a longer period, although a period prescribed in law, would be easier for departments to adjust to and try to meet these timelines?
Mr. Andreessen?
Yeah, Representative Bynum through the chair. I guess I don't know how to. Yes, I'd like to be there in person too. I'm not sure exactly how to answer this. I appreciate that agencies need it easier, and also that only means that local government tribes and nonprofits have to pick up the difference. And I don't know what to do during that period. And that means that that each of those entities, or I mean, if this were the private sector. Would be experiencing a cash flow issue that would be having all the challenges that we're talking about today, and instead of months long or 90 days, it's only 60. So I think we're really trying to get away from an expectation that's okay, and I think that's what the 30 days does. I think the other kind of part of your question has to do with, all right, so what are other tools we can give departments to get to 30 days. And I mentioned in my remarks kind of both sides of the equation, all the vetting that goes in prior to submission of an invoice or request for reimbursement. And then once you get it, to do all the additional reviews that might be necessary. And I think what's misunderstood maybe within that equation is that local governments, tribes, and nonprofits have all the same obligations as the state does for many of these, and that's embedded in the contracts and grants. They carry the liability for performing and delivering on services. And ultimately, the state kind of working on both sides of the equation makes it more difficult and take longer. And maybe if we trusted or did our due diligence once and kind of a trust but verify approach for some of these payments, you would see a more expedited, efficient process that doesn't mean that state agencies take it easier, but actually have less work because they've only had to do something just once and well.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Galvin?
Thank you. I don't have a question for Mr. Andreessen, but if I do have other questions, if you'd like me to proceed.
Sure. Representative Galvin.
Okay. Thank you. Well, I've been looking at this bill for all of, I think, 4 days so far, and really have appreciated it. My staff looked into it. I was particularly interested in understanding how it is that it's different from private organizations who are for-profit and the non-for-profit. Because to me, a due date for payment is a due date for payment. That's how when I pay my bills, I don't pay attention to one or the other. So I was trying to kind of split that apart, especially in light of what we heard from Representative Hannon. Like, are we giving the right tools to government to pay their bills, if you will, for both not-for-profit or small, you know, whether it's a municipality or government or whether it is a private. So I just want to lay that out there, that there is, I understand that there is a difference. In my research, I found that for private, what other states are doing, 33 states or more are doing prompt payment. And it's different. It can be 30 days. Mostly it's 30 days, but some have 14, Arizona. That surprised me. Or 21 days for New Mexico. And then the only one longer than 30 is Utah. But then I asked for, well, what are we doing in other states with regard to the nonprofit or the municipality sectors? Found that about eight states from what I could see, and I'm giving you this because I want to hear who you modeled after. So just wanted to share. What I dug into a little bit more was Nevada, because theirs is so recent. And sort of had something similar around it being private nonprofit corporations. And it also talked about whichever is longer with regard to it being the federal piece if they're passed through and things like that. This is complicated, but at the same time, it's how do they keep paying their employers? There were all the bills that we just – employees, all the bills that we just heard about from Mr. Andreessen and Ms. Wolf. So it's something that, you know, we don't want to close down all of those services. I get it, but I also understand that – apparently, our state has had some problems paying the bills. And it's not just our state. Other states have also been grappling with this. And so I'm going to get to this question, which is, I assume you've modeled this after a state maybe or other states in multiple. And how did you choose that? And have you found that whatever they did put in place has helped? And, you know, if there were challenges in terms of this sort of a long list of fiscal notes, which may be what we need to do this right, maybe we're just missing those pieces, whether it's training or equipment or more bodies in the department. But if you could help us understand what you learned from other states and in your study and in choosing this, that would be helpful for me.
Representative Hemshoot.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the co-chair, we modeled the bill on our own language that we already have in statute for private contractors. Okay. However, the idea was something I got, I think, at a conference, and I had heard about Maryland doing this same nonprofit parody.
Okay.
And as far as how that's worked out in other states, I have not followed that, but we can try to get some more information.
Thank you.
Okay. Further questions of the committee? Okay.
I have one more, if I may.
Sure, Representative Galvin.
Thank you. I just want to note and put on record that we know we have had some growing to do with regard to being a good pass-through, for example. And I want to make sure that we know as a committee that last year, I believe it was $12 million that we paid to the federal government because we couldn't figure out, not that we couldn't figure out, but we weren't able to get ourselves up to speed with regard to SNAP as a pass-through. So what we ended up doing is a $12 million, and I think we're looking at possibly $9 million in the coming year. So our being able to get money out in a efficient way feels very important to me and important to all of us, I think, especially as we manage, like, how can we invest in a way that would allow us to end up at the end of the day investing overall less. So, and we heard it from Representative Stapp a few weeks ago. Is it cheaper to just pay our fines? Or is it cheaper to pay our bills on time? And that's just what I want to make sure that we're thinking about.
Okay. Representative Andreessen, before we move on, anything else?
Chair Foster, nothing
gosh.
Else. I really appreciate the committee's time today for your consideration. And I think, you know, ultimately just know that this is, it's systemic, right? And all we want is a state that's able to do all the good things that it wants to, right? We respect the work of our departments, divisions, all the agency staff who are putting in tons of work to doing their best. If we can lighten the load by making additional investments in their teams in lots of different ways, and And if this legislation can help move us toward that space where ultimately we're all successful and local governments, tribes, nonprofits, the private sector, anybody paid by the state for services delivered on behalf of the state are able to receive their funds in a timely fashion, I think that's success, and we're all aiming in that direction. And I appreciate the committee's, I think, recognition along the way of just how important that is. Thank you.
Thank you. And I just wanted to state that I think my addressing you was accurate. You're the executive director, a representative of the Alaska Municipal League. And so I just wanted to clarify that. So thank you for being here today. Okay. And our next testifier is Mr. Mayor Chinar, mayor of Tuksuk Bay. And Sam, I believe, is your first name. If you could maybe state your first name, or I'm sorry, your first and last name, and then your title, just to make sure I've got that right. Put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Mr. Chair, co-chairs and members of the committee, my name is Sam Chinar. I am from Tuksuk Bay and representing city of Tuksuk Bay.
Okay, and please go ahead with your testimony.
Only in the years 2020 and 2021, the city received community assistance program payments before July 31st. I am in full support for the passage of HB 133. The census 2020 population for Tuksuk was 658. The city provides essential municipal services that cannot stop. Our community has a piped water and sewer facility, electric utility, refuse collection services, landfill, street lights, contract postal unit, among others. The city cannot do without proofs of insurance coverages for property, casualty, workers' compensation, and employers' liability. The city depends on cap funding for the partial payment of insurance renewals. Every year, the city tackles with insurance renewals and deadlines, facing the uncertainty of whether or not a full payment can be submitted by the July 31 deadline. If not, as a second-class municipality, the city places itself as subject to being sued for not having secured any insurance coverages for the services. The city will have no choice but to reallocate budgeted line items from department salaries, utilities, and others in order to pay for the insurance. The budget reallocations unnecessarily disrupts the city services and operations. And I thank you for the opportunity to be testifying in House Committee. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. And we do have a question from Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I wanted to ask you some questions, Mayor Chinar. How long has your community been waiting on payments from the state, and what has that actually cost Tuksuk?
Mayor Chinar.
Through the chair, Representative Jimmy. Like I said, in years 2020 and year 2021, we received our cap payment in month of July. And the other years, we received cap payments like in September, October, August, September, October, from 2017 to 2024.
Question.
Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Has the delay payment ever forced you to stop or slow down a service in Tuksuk? that we depend on?
Mayor Tenar?
Oh, I can use last year's as an example. We waited the very last minute to contact our insurance company that we need a payment plan. The fiscal year budgets, in order to qualify for CAP and PELT, we need to pass them before July. So we have no anticipated expenses for interests. And that's if we entered into a payment plan with the insurance company. Last year, we had $3,000 in interest just to enter into a payment plan with the insurance company. So that's unanticipated item expense. We have to divert some funding from other departments in order to be able to pay the required 50% payment to qualify for the contract payment. Otherwise, we'll be facing insurance coverage cancellations within a month by the time we reach August. So if we don't receive CAP funding and PELT, the payment in lieu of taxes, on time, then we're shuffling money around and we have we can experience cash shortages that could lead to non-payment of other bills, and those non-payment of other bills will include late payment fee. So those are additional expenses that were not anticipated because of untimely payment of CAP or PELT.
Representative Jimmy?
Thank you, Coach Foster. So what do you do when the state is late paying you? Do you borrow money? Do you pull it from savings? Do you stop providing a service?
Mayor Chenar?
To the chair, Representative Jimmy, we have in our budget I'm sorry, wait. So we have maybe 6 or 7 departments that are listed in our annual budget. So administration and finance income itself has 121% of the annual budget. And the other departments that are standalone, we try not to touch them. So we have post office that has like 2% of the annual budget. AVAC, which is the electric utility for our community, it has 4% of the budget. The gaming, the non-charitable gaming enterprise, it's 97%. Oh, no, I'm sorry, 65%. So in administration, we have 25%, and the insurance alone, insurance is the second highest expense in our administration department at 39%, where the first one is salaries and the rest are minor expenses like utilities. So if we don't receive a timely payment, then it disrupts our plant operations. So we have to rely on gaming contributions. The gaming contributions, they are designed to help our residents. We try not to take any from gaming donated budgeted items for city operations, but we have no options, but that's where we can donate for governmental expenses.
Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Coach Foster. What would it mean for Tuksuk if this bill passes?
Mr. Mayor Chinar?
Through the chair, Representative Jimmy, can you restate the question, please?
Representative Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. What would it mean for Tuksuk Bay if this bill passes?
Through the chair, Representative Jimmy, if the bill passes and municipalities like Tuksuk and other smaller communities, when we receive the cap payments, per payments before July 31, then we would not have to set aside funding to pay for added interests. We would have no late fees. And each year, as a requirement to approve an authorized budget for the fiscal year, which is taken care of like in April, May, June, will be close to spending as authorized or budgeted.
Okay. Thank you so very much, Mayor Chinar, for your testimony. I appreciate you being here. I'm going to go ahead and close this out. We've got conference committee in a few minutes, and I know a number of folks have to be there. So with that, Representative Himshute, thank you so very much for presenting this bill. And we're going to go ahead and close out. Our next scheduled meeting is tomorrow. That's Tuesday, March 24th at 9 a.m. And at that meeting, we'll take up a committee substitute for the operating budget. So if there's nothing else to come for the committee, we'll be adjourned at 3:24 p.m.